Beardsley v. Colvin, 13-3609. Mr. Sellers.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Joseph Sellers, appearing on behalf of Ms. Beardsley today. Ms. Beardsley seeks reversal or remand of an administrative law judge's decision denying her claim for disability benefits. This case is about the ALJ's misplaced reliance on Beardsley's daily activities in order to deny Ms. Beardsley's claim for benefits. The government argues that the ALJ did not place undue weight or rely on these activities to any great extent. But the ALJ's own analysis belies the government's argument and places a primacy on those activities. Indeed, the ALJ cited those activities as the sole reason for rejecting the opinion of Dr. Banyash, an opinion that, if adopted, would have led to a finding of disability for Ms. Beardsley. By all accounts, including the ALJ's, Beardsley's daily activities are extremely limited. They're limited to caring for her mother, by which I mean that she cooks late meals for her mother, helps her mother get out of bed, plays cards with her mother, and cooks late meals. When she goes grocery shopping for herself, it's twice a month, 30 minutes at a time, and she leans on the cart for support. The next day, she's sore in the knees for the entire day after those trips. When she cleans her own mobile home, it takes two full days. She can only vacuum for 5 to 10 minutes at a time because of the pain. Then she has to rest. It takes her 3 days to do laundry because of pain. The ALJ took these activities, found them fairly limited, yet held them against Ms. Beardsley in the end, without any explanation for why he did so. That analysis defies meaningful review. And the government argues that the ALJ did not place undue weight on these activities because he noted that they were fairly limited and points to this court's concerns that ALJs have routinely ignored the limited nature of activities of daily living. But this court doesn't simply require ALJs to note the nature of activities. This court requires ALJs to build a logical bridge between the evidence and their conclusions. And that's what's missing here. A logical bridge from these admittedly limited activities to the ultimate conclusion that these activities support a finding that Ms. Beardsley can be on her feet with a torn ACL, unrepaired, positive examination findings for 6 hours out of an 8-hour day.
You're not disputing that she could do sedentary work?
I'm not going to say that that's the correct finding, but if the ALJ had properly evaluated the opinion evidence and relied on even Dr. Banyash's opinion that she would be limited to sedentary, that's far more accurate than the light RFC that she was given. And with that sedentary RFC, she would have been entitled to a finding of disability at the age of 50.
The real dispute, as the case comes to us right now, is whether this lady can stand on her feet in a full-time job.
Correct.
About 6 hours a day, although with some breaks, am I right? Some
kids. Normal breaks. The ALJ did say that she could sit and stand as needed, but Dr. Banyash said that she couldn't even do that enough to meet the requirements for light RFC.
And for that is basically relying on the fact that she helps her mother get in and out of bed.
Exactly, Your Honor. And
the ALJ relied on Dr. Brill primarily, is that
yes,
right?
Your Honor.
Did Dr. Brill examine the plaintiff?
No, Your Honor.
Okay,
it's a non-examining.
This is the records examination. Just the records review.
Exactly,
thank
including
you.
Dr. Banyash's. But Banyash had her in front of him. He performed the physical examination. He tested her knee for stability, and he found that she could not stand.
No, obesity is part of the problem here, isn't that?
Sorry?
Your client is obese.
Yes, she is.
Yes.
Yes.
So she's putting a lot of weight on that leg.
Yes, Your Honor. And
because the ACL, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Is the ACL subject to surgical repair?
Surgery was recommended, but she opted not to have the surgery when it was recommended in 2008. But the physical findings have worsened since then. When she first injured it, she had relatively normal findings, and then by 2010 with Dr. Banyash, she had the instability, the positive drawer test, the positive patellar grind test, etc., which further support her allegations. The government does point out that the ALJ does consider some other factors in assessing Ms. Beardsley's residual functional capacity, but each of the ALJ's analysis, each of those additional factors is also flawed. The ALJ relies on Beardsley's own statements about her abilities, but as I said earlier, those statements are extremely qualified. The fact that she can clean is qualified by the fact that it takes breaks every 5 to 10 minutes to vacuum one room. She has to lean on the cart for support. She's out of commission the next day as a result. The laundry takes 3 days to complete. She can't even care for her pets. She can only play with them. Her daughter and a friend help actually care for the pets. So the ALJ's reliance on those statements without any explanation is similarly flawed. The ALJ also relied on what he characterized as benign objective findings, pointing to those essentially normal findings in 2008, but that ignores those later positive findings by Dr. Banyash and also ignores the positive MRI and X-ray findings of the actual ACL rupture. The ALJ's characterization of Ms. Beardsley's conservative treatment ignores the fact that she didn't have much treatment, that she refused to have the invasive surgery prior to alleging disability. And the ALJ is prohibited from relying on limited treatment without first inquiring into the reasons, and the ALJ did not do so in this case. The ALJ also cites a lack of a treating doctor's opinion supporting a finding of disability, but in a case such as this, where there's been limited treatment, and the Social Security's own examining doctor has provided an opinion which supports disability, that lack of a treating physician's opinion is of little probative value and should not have provided any support for the ALJ's RFC.
Mr. Sellers, let me just raise a more general philosophical question with you.
Please.
I'm happy to have a legal answer to it, but we have here a claimant whose doctors are recommending that she get surgery. I don't know if she can afford it or not, if she has insurance or not. I don't know what that situation is. But and I understand she may have a perfect right to say, no, I don't want that surgery. On the other hand, there are a lot of taxpayers who pay Social Security taxes into to the relevant funds, who are being asked then to provide long-term support for somebody who has a fixable problem. How does the law deal with that?
The law deals with it by placing the onus on the administrative law judge to probe into her reasons for not getting that surgery, which it's not even clear whether or not that would have fixed the problem. And as Your Honor indicated, it's unclear if there were other issues involved, finance, insurance,
etc. Just not explored on this record.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I believe Ms. Beardsley did pay into the system herself, so to some extent.
I'm sure she did. she was insured, no doubt.
Yes, she was.
And all of us who pay into it are grateful for it.
So, Mr. Sellers, you want to save your remaining time?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Neltner?
May it please the Court, my name is Andrew Neltner. I represent the Acting Commissioner of the Social Security Administration Council. In this case, I think the thing to focus on, at least from the outset, is that the ALJ did not reject Dr. Banish's opinion. The ALJ gave Dr. Banish some weight. This was just not a wholesale, let's throw it out and not look at what this doctor found.
Essentially, he said, well, since she can take care of her mother, then she must have that ability to work?
I would disagree with that characterization. I think what the ALJ found was that the care that she took for her mother set a minimum bar. It showed at least what she could do. The ALJ did not come forth and say, hey, I'm going to find this residual functional capacity, and here is the reason why. The ALJ said, I found residual functional capacity for less than light work, and then gave 7 reasons as to why that residual functional capacity should be sustained or had support. So while we put a lot of emphasis in the argument on Dr. Banyish, the fact of the matter is that the decision only puts a limited amount or a certain amount of weight on what Dr. Banyish's opinion was and why that results in the residual functional capacity. I mean, we also have here her seeing her physicians and her reporting to her treating physicians for her knee that she was content to maintain the status quo. There is nothing in the record that speaks directly to whether or not there was an ability to pay involved here. We do know that during the hearing testimony, the ALJ asked her how she paid her bills, and she said that her boyfriend paid them. She was represented by counsel. There's just simply no delving into an ability.
Well, wasn't the ALJ obligated to find out why she rejected the surgery to get some reasons for that?
I believe the ALJ is obligated to find out why if the reasons aren't apparent on the record, and I think they are apparent here. I mean,
what were the reasons that were apparent?
She told her Dr. Nelson, who is the doctor that recommended the surgery, that she has good days and bad days, but for the most part is not bothered enough that she is ready to consider surgical intervention. In December of 2009, she said she's much better as far as her knee goes. Quote, happy to get along with her symptoms as she is. That's at transcript page 352. She's telling her doctor that her knee is not a problem. When you look at the record, that's what it shows, and that's what the ALJ relies on in part in reaching the residual functional capacity. She later says that it causes more difficulty for her, but it's just not supported at the end of the day. I mean, she's treating her pain with over-the-counter Tylenol. There's just not enough there to support any greater limitations than the ALJ found, and the ALJ did find some. The ALJ did give her the ability to sit or stand, limit her to standing and walking no more than 30 minutes at a time. So it's not like the ALJ turned a blind eye to these issues.
Mr. Milner, I guess I'm after seeing a lot of Social Security cases, I'm trying to remember one in which the ALJ, another one in which the ALJ found a residual functional capacity that was greater than an examining agency physician had found. It seems highly unusual to me.
I can't think of one offhand myself, Your Honor, but I will note that in this case there are actually two agency physicians here. There's Dr. Brill.
Examining.
Yes, Your Honor. I.
Dr. Brill just looked at the records.
Correct. Correct. I have had limited practice, but I am not aware of one either. But I think the important thing, though, is despite the examining physician's position here, that there was another physician that also looked at the complete record and then made an initial additional assessment, and that's Dr. Brill, who found that claimant actually could do more than sedentary work. In addition, you'll also note, and this is something that the ALJ relies on, that the record doesn't have any restrictions from her treating physicians as to her knee. Dr. Nelson, who was taking care of the knee and who recommended the surgery, didn't prescribe anything for ambulation. There's nothing in the record as to she should limit activity or abilities.
Going back, though, to Brill's report is pretty brief. I mean, there are only 6 lines of evidence he uses to support his analysis, including the past medical history, with the only factor pointing against disability being her normal range of movement. It's unclear, really, what he bases his opinion on, that she's not disabled.
I think that
you're... And he further says that she has no allegations of physical impairment and no physical impairments, and that, I mean, everywhere else she says she is disabled and explains the issues that she has. And in the examination, the full examination where the doctor actually examined her, he actually is pretty specific as to the issues that she has.
You're correct, Your Honor, in the amount of the reasons that Dr. Brill gives as to supporting his findings. In terms of the allegations of physical impairments, Dr. Brill did review Dr. Banyash's opinion, which does contain her complaints about her knee and the problems that it provides to her. I believe what the no allegations of physical impairments is reference to is that when she filed her initial application, she only listed mental problems as a basis for disability. She did not cite any problems with her knee when she applied for disability in 2009.
Yeah, but things had changed. I mean, the ALJ acknowledged the MRI where there were tears in the rupture, but he ignored the 2009 x-ray, the 2010 test showing she tested positive on the anterior drawer, the patella grinding, McMurray and Lockman, and really ignored evidence that undermined his conclusion.
I don't believe that those tests actually undermine the ALJ's conclusion or that the ALJ ignored them. What those tests show, there were four tests, and these are tests that are cited by Dr. Banyash during the examination. There's the anterior drawer left knee, there's the Lockman's test. Those both relate to showing something's wrong with your ACL. The MRI showed that there was something wrong with her ACL. There's no issue as to whether or not there was something wrong with her ACL, and the ALJ doesn't deny it. The ALJ cites the MRI and says, points to this evidence that there's something wrong with her ACL. The other, one of the other tests is the McMurray's compression test. That relates to the meniscus. Again, the MRI showed that there was a problem with the meniscus. No one is disputing whether there was a problem here. The issue is the effect of the problem. And so the ALJ didn't reject those tests as found by Dr. Banyash. All those tests showed was that the MRI wasn't faulty. They're just corresponding to one another.
Then the ALJ relied on her statement that her knees were fine 3 weeks after injections that targeted her knees, and those statements were made 9 months before the hearing. And it wasn't the same status.
According to claimant, it was not the same status. But the ALJ is faced with the entire record and has no recommendations from the treating surgeon that she should have any restrictions. She declines the surgery. Once she starts to say she actually has problems with her knee, there are no records whatsoever for her getting any treatment for it. All of this evidence put together, the ALJ's conclusion, which I believe is substantially justified, is that the problems with her knee were not enough to preclude her from a less than light work. The ALJ takes all these factors together and reaching the conclusion, again, there were 7 reasons cited in support of the RFC, not just one. I will note also there was one other, just to be clear, there was one other test cited by Dr. Banyash, which was a patellar grinding test, which I believe has to do with the patellofemoral joint, which can sometimes result in runner's knee. That was a quote-unquote new, that was not cited by the previous surgeon, although there's no evidence that there was any real difficulty from it, but just to be clear, the commissioner's position there. At the end of the day, what the ALJ is faced with is a claimant who alleged problems with her knees and mental problems, yet was not getting further treatment for them. Her medication management for her mental problems stayed the same. There are no records of exacerbations for her mental issues. She takes care of her mother. These activities in taking care of her mother are different from activities of her vacuuming. The care for her mother is something that's constant and is all day long. It's from 8:30 or 8:40 to 6 or 6:30, she said.
Well, he's played cards a lot.
That is,
and looked at TV.
That is indeed part of what
she
did.
So that doesn't take a lot of physical use of your knees.
I would concur in that aspect, but she's doing this care all day long, and the ALJ didn't say that because she can do that, she can work. The ALJ said because she can do that, she can do more than she seems to allege.
Well, then, even when she talks about the mother, she helps the mother lift her legs into bed, but there's no testimony as to what is involved in that. And then once she does that, she has to lie down. And isn't the ALJ really equating housework to a full-time job, basically saying she has a full-time job since she can care for her mother then?
The ALJ is definitely not equating that to a full-time job. The ALJ specifically stated and noted that her activities were fairly limited. The commissioner's position that this is just not one of those cases, and we are well aware of them, where the ALJs and this court has advised the agency where ALJs are equating activities of daily living with full-time jobs, and this is just simply not that case. I see that my time is up. Are there no further questions?
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
How much time does Mr. Sellers have? 1 minute, Mr. Sellers.
Thank you. Just a couple of points I want to make. The government does cite that the ALJ gave 7 reasons for his residual functional capacity assessment, but as I explained earlier, each of those 7 reasons was similarly flawed. So pointing to 7 flawed reasons does not help the ALJ's decision stand up to scrutiny any more than just pointing to 1. Your Honors have pointed to the lack of clarity in Dr. Brill's opinion, and that lack of clarity is compounded by the ALJ's failure to explain why, other than the caring for the mother, Dr. Banyash's opinion should be rejected. The regulations require the ALJs to look at several factors when evaluating medical opinions and deciding which ones to believe, one of which is how well the medical source explains his or her opinion. And in this case, as Your Honor pointed out, Dr. Brill did not provide any reasonable explanation. And in fact, he did not provide any reason for why he disagreed with Dr. Banyash, who had the benefit of examining Ms. Beardsley. And that is also one of the factors that the ALJs are required to consider in analyzing medical opinion evidence. Thank you. That is all I have.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Sellers. Thank you, both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.